Good evening and welcome to One Game at a Time, where we track the development of the game that you know and love. And you can contact us on the Facebook at One Game at a Time or on the Twitter. Our handle is at Origins of Footy. Our episode this evening is, oh no, not again. They're at it again. They're changing rules because our game is apparently in crisis. Ryan, is it in crisis?
I think it is. I think these are in all sorts, Liam. I think we're in all sorts, mainly because I'm not sure what's going on with your intro, but I like the old one. I'm going to say it now. But there's all sorts going on. Warnie's getting involved. Waleed Ali's causing problems. We've got all sorts going on at the moment.
Can you define the crises? What are the things that are...
Well, rule changes is what everyone's talking about. And what all these fantastic celebrities are getting involved in. Mm. We've got some things we need to fix, I think. Ball ups, stoppages. We've got a few things.
And Finn, do you sit in this camp?
Oh, absolutely rubbish, gentlemen. I've never heard so much fucking big talk all in my life.
Shock.
This idea that the game is in crisis is... I'm speechless. Stoppages, ball-ups, congestions, flooding, pressing. This has been going on since 1859. And I've had a gutful. I've had an absolute gutful of these so-called experts coming out and saying that there's something wrong with the game. We need to tweak it. Let the game continue to develop organically.
You're here on One Game at a Time here with three of your fantastic friends, and here's how we're going to go about it. I've got an agenda of rule changes.
Oh my God, we're organised.
We are bloody organised. But before we get to the agenda of rule changes, where I'm going to ask the questions point blank, say whether we need them or not, we have to dip our hands into the mailbag.
All right, I'm on mailbag, I think, this evening, Liam.
What is that's in all the right. Mail?
Yeah, we've been contacted through Facebook. Willem Shalash. Shalash.
It's William Shaq.
It's not Shaq. That's not how you spell Shaq. S-H-A-Q is Shaq. Everyone knows that. The basketball... No?
I'm telling you, the Germans say they do it.
They say Shaq.
Yeah,
it's shellac. Anyway, Willem, I'm so sorry. I probably offended him. Another one. He's interested, and this links very nicely.
You take over mailbag and you begin to offend people. Maybe it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, maybe it's mailbag, mate. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe it's mailbag. Or maybe it's Liam.
Right, so
it's interesting that Willem brought up this question this week. So he was interested if there is any chat from us about if the VFA having 16 players on the field compared to the VFL had any effect on the game and the way. He didn't specify, but we've managed to grab some data, have we, Liam?
We have. So the women's game currently have the 16 aside to avoid the congestion problem. But in looking at some statistical analysis of the VFA versus the VFL from the 60s right through until the early 90s, every single season the VFA outstripped the VFL in terms of scoring. In 1970, for example, the average score was 102 points in the VFA, and the average score in the VFL a paltry 87. Each year, that sort of differential took place, and usually in the teens was the difference. It was usually about 3 goals more in the VFA, all the way up, interestingly, until 1992, where it switches, and in 92, of course, VFA changed to 18 aside. This lends incredible weight to the idea that more space on the field means more open play, therefore more goals. Now, you can argue any other which way that you like, but in 1992, it was almost even Stevens. But a few years just before that, in 1989, 114 was the average score in the VFA, and 94 was the average in the VFL.
There you go.
And yeah, there you go. So... thank you very much for writing in to mailbag, William Shaq.
William Shaq, right, that's his name now.
Yes,
it's Willem Shalek. So,
sure.
this just sees why Finney's totally mad and off his rocker, really, in terms of not wanting the game to develop in the way that it was meant to.
I didn't say
to.
I didn't want to develop. I said I wasn't in crisis.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. You know, going...
Is he a purist?
Well, say? I think he might be.
Yeah. I'm going to nominate the rule change.
Shit.
Okay. You guys say yes or no.
We ran a tight ship.
And we'll see how the conversation sort of progresses. Okay. First rule change proposal. Do we need a send-off rule?
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
No.
I think this... I can't... this is the rule out of everything that we're going to talk about tonight that I feel most strongly about. The issue here is not about whether or not it's a significant consequence and whether or not the... I suppose what happens after the game and the judicial panels that look after the, 5, 6, 10 weeks that someone forgets for, just belting someone in the middle of play.
Mm.
For me, it's about the fact that consequence needs to be absolutely instant. That individual has had an impact on that game at that moment, yet we're punishing them weeks in advance. And from someone who didn't grow up with the sport, I find that so alien. It's the one thing about this sport I find so bizarre, is that they don't get a consequence at that moment and they still get to have an effect on the game.
Finn, you say no.
I think it could be used, just like any rule, can be pulled and twisted to suit your own benefit. So I think I gave the example when I had a chat to my brother the other day that, say you got a quality player like Heppel and he's been sent off for striking and the umpires deem that right there and then that it was striking, you're off for the whole match.
Mm.
That player is of a lesser caliber than Heppel. So potentially, he goes down the bench, gets a concussion test, turns out he's ready to go back on.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't bring him back on.
Okay. New rule change, second agenda item. Do we need to review the below the knees impact? Ryan?
This is a really, really tough one. I think we do need to review it, though, just to follow suit again. I just think there's too much grey area, I think.
Okay, that's a yes.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot of grey area.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
well, we fixed that one then. Well done.
Yeah. What I'm hearing from you, though, is that the rule itself is designed appropriately for player safety, knees, shins, ankles, etc. But the way that it is enforced, the way that it's interpreted is problematic.
Yeah, look, I just think the nature of the game is there's times where guys have stood over the ball stationary, which means studs locked into the turf. So there is that. I think that danger around guys getting hurt from the knee down, because most of the time in other sports, what you're thinking, like, why doesn't soccer have anything like that, or anything else, rugby or gridiron, I think most of the time those guys are on the move, so therefore they they get hit below the knee, their legs just come out from under them and there's no danger. I think there's times in NFL where the guy picking the ball up or the guy over the ball is stationary, studs locked into the turf, and then you can get hurt. But the issue is that, that's not what we see these free kicks being paid for. We see them, paid for that, 50, barely glancing blow.
Well, we haven't got this right for 100 and, almost 160 years. So it used to be called rabbiting.
Yeah.
And we used to just stoop down and take someone's legs out whilst going for the ball. And if we go back even further, the tripping or pushing was allowed in May 1859. Disallowed in July 1859 when they discovered that that's way too dangerous.
Yes.
So we have changed, chopped and changed, altered for so long, and we are still sitting here and discussing it today.
Yes, and again, we're no closer to consensus.
No, but the game's continued and we've had some great things. So again, to come back to the crisis, we've had this problem 160 years. Is this a massive problem?
It's a crisis. Are you not reading social media?
Morning's furious.
Anything to do with the newspaper. Item 3 on our rule changes list, and this is one of my favourites.
Oh, this is great.
Deliberate out of bounds. Does it need to be reviewed, Ryan?
If you'd asked me 5 years ago, I'd have said yes. I'm starting to lean towards no.
Fantastic. Finn?
I like the last touch.
There is a tension that's been created in the last 5 minutes of games where sides clearing the ball seemingly into space with a player who looks like they're going to collect that ball skids away and goes out of bounds, and there's this sort of audible gasp by everyone, as if to say this is going to be paid deliberate. And I don't know, there's this the theatrical, I kind of love it. I think it's awesome. Yeah, like, we wait this moment like, oh, God. Like, yeah. I kind of put it.
One of our listeners, Timothy Moore, spoke to me about it today, and he said, you've got to keep it for the theatre of it.
There you go.
It's like early in the game, the players turn around and appeal for it, like it's an LBW decision.
It's so true.
But late in the game, when it could change the course of what happens, the whole crowd become animated in it, and it begins booing and all that excitement. So just for the theatrics of it, it's worth having. Do we need to review the protected 10-metre space? You know, the 50-metre penalty for Dan Hannabury running.
Oh, look. Yeah.
Directly past the plate of the ball and not moving east-west.
Yeah. I think the AFL umpire we had on not too long ago, Eleni Glufskas, who, when we asked her this question, gave a very media savvy answer and answered it beautifully. But
would you say jobs and growth or something?
Well,
yeah. I don't know if she said that.
No. Yeah. Yeah, it was close. So, her highlighting the fact that this is the rule and I'm paying it sort of indicated to me that maybe if there's an on-field umpire who doesn't have an opinion about it, maybe there's something wrong. It just looks wrong. It just looks totally, ridiculous.
Because what problem is it meant to solve? Yeah. It's meant to solve the problem that people were being squeezed in terms of they've got control of the play, but they can't play on or can't get a couple of reasonable steps to get a decent kick. But the punishment is almost always a shot for goal.
Yeah.
And the punishment doesn't seem to fit the crime for me.
Yeah.
So I think it needs to change. Finn?
It certainly does need a review. In fact, it was changed in 96 where it used to be, it went from a 10-metre semicircle for a set disposal from a mark or free kick, and then it got changed to a 5-metre corridor on each side. That was 96. The umpire that's sprinting around, all these players around, at that split second, he or she's got to decide, is that player trying to impact the person with the ball or are they simply just trying to get on their player? That's an incredibly difficult job for them.
Yeah.
Yes. Do we need to limit interchange more thoroughly or to reduce the amount of interchange? The cap is 90 at the moment. Do we need to reduce it?
Look, I think this one's really hard because the way that players adapt physiologically to what's presented to them in terms of interchange, they've got that many sports physiologists, exercise physiologists these days who look after their training so tightly that the idea that you change interchange suddenly means that you've got less sprints, so therefore guys have to run longer distances, and it goes back to this kind of different way of playing, older way of playing, let's say. I find that really hard to believe because I think the training would just adapt and that it wouldn't make any difference.
So yes or no?
I wouldn't touch it.
Leave it at 90?
I'd leave it at 90.
Okay, Finn.
I agree. I don't think any number will reduce congestion or try to change the game, which the AFL wants. Yep. Players will just adapt.
Okay, I've got a view about this one. I'm not quite Kevin Bartlett, but Kevin Bartlett believes that you should pick your 18 and they should represent you, and it should be the substitution method because people getting tired on the field leads to mistakes, changes, fatigue, etc. And that often leads to open, free-flowing footy. I don't quite side there, but I think having infinite interchange, which is what it was until very recently, it turns it into a game of athletics where no one ever gets tired. The example used in Coventry's book is of Shane Crawford, who had one of the best seasons any player's ever had in 1999. And on a review of his performance, the coach reviewing him said, "Why didn't you chase that guy hard defensively?" And Crawford says, "I can't run flat out up and down the field for the whole quarter." And that guy was Chris Connolly. Chris Connolly, in the early 2000s, took that theory away with him and said, what if we can get our players to run flat out all the time?
Mm.
Surely that gives us an advantage. And he started to use the interchange in that way. And what happened at Fremantle first and then at all the other clubs subsequently, by about the late 2000s, was people were getting their rest, running flat out all the time, therefore able to chase people up, always have possession, and you get the more choreographed form of play that we've got now. I don't think it's as sexy as it was late 80s. Statistically, it's not as sexy anyway. All through the, from the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, the scores average between sort of 13 and 16 goals a game. And ever since the interchange has been used the way that it has, scores have reduced. So from 2007, the average score was 13.8 goals a game, and it's reduced every year pretty much until this year, 2018, where 12 goals is the average. And that's right down from 16 goals being an average in the sort of early 80s. So there's evidence to suggest that people coming on and turning it into a game of athletics reduces scoring. And for me, that all comes from the overuse of the interchange. Interestingly, still, for those who want to get academic about it, it was in 1978 that the substitution system was changed. Two players could then be interchanged rather than replaced. Prior to 1978, you had 18 men on the field and you could change with a 19th and a 20th man, a la soccer. And then it was in 94, an introduction of the third interchange man and the blood rule. And then the fourth interchange player in 98, and then in the thousands at some stage, that disastrous sub. Okay, a couple of other ones. Kicking backwards, play on.
No, that's bonkers.
Both no.
Yes.
Okay.
That was a bizarre one for me because I arrived in the country in like 2004 and then started watching games, well, watched 21 games in the first 2.5-3 years I was here live. And people, that is when people started getting quite cross about people kicking the ball sideways and backwards quite a lot.
It was bullying,
exactly right. And coming from, I suppose different sports, soccer being one of them, I did not know what was happening. I don't know why. I couldn't get who they were angry at. Like, why are they booing this man?
Patrick Dangerfield's for shorter games believes that we should have reduced time, that the games go for too long and the excitement is sort of concentrated into a small amount of time. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I think I'm for it.
Is it just because Patrick Dangerfield likes it?
I think so. So well, look, it was the last time we've done this was in 94. So what was that? You know, 24 years ago where, it went from 25 plus time on to 20. Time on. Every time the AFL tries to change something, it has an effect on something else.
On tactics.
So remember they wanted to speed up the game by you don't have to wait for the umpire to wave a flag, yet we want to nominate ruckman at stoppages. So you want to speed up the game for one, but then you want to slow down the game.
Yeah.
So this is my issue with...
a calorie neutral
change. Is my issue with crisis. Every time they try to change something, it affects something else, something existing already.
Yep.
So we just continue going around in circles. So once we make it 15 minutes, obviously players are going to have less time on the field, which means they're going to have more energy, which means they're going to get to contest.
Yep.
And you're going to create more congestion.
Shortening the game, I feel like the endurance nature of the game goes down, which is such a unique thing about this sport, is that you've got these incredible aerobic athletes who are moving towards more of a sort of anaerobic way of playing because there's so much time sprinting.
And they're running half marathons almost.
Yeah, exactly right. So I think shortening the game, I mean, it might be exciting because you get more people like Dangerfield, probably.
Yeah, I still like the half an hour, a quarter. I think the 2.5 hours spent at the MCG is quality time. And we could do with having a curtain raiser as well, but anyway, that's a different issue. New lines. We've seen horrendous, big goal squares. There's a sense of sort of...
zones?
Yeah, zones, like a grid formation put on there. Where do you stand on any of that?
Netball thirds. When I first heard that one, I was kind of intrigued. I thought that was a really interesting way of, without touching some of these other things that we talked about in terms of interchange and therefore affecting maybe the type of athlete, that you move guys into different areas. Mm. I thought that was kind of unique. However, that from a look perspective, that is a significant change. Yeah. And that, getting the public on board with that is, I think that would be much, much trickier.
Well, the TAC Cup used it in the under 18.
Yeah.
Where two forwards and two defenders had to stay within the 50 metre arc.
Yeah.
And they basically couldn't progress beyond there at any stage. So everything had to happen inside 50. But it's just never come to fruition. And I think that's the trouble with it, that the public sell.
Yeah.
Is the hardest bit. Finn, new lines, restricted zones, that sort of thing?
No.
Oh, he doesn't like it. He hates that.
On his face.
Look, the only time I've done that was 1973 with the Diamond.
Well, it's a precursor to the square, isn't it? The centre square.
Well, yeah, and then 2 years later, the square, and that was a form of zone.
Mm.
But I really like the idea that you can completely throw a team by, say, doing what, you know, Kennedy did with his Commandos in 73 by starting everyone back.
Mm.
And then the opposition is in for a day of, you can throw training out that week.
Mm.
We got something new here. And I think that's really exciting to have. And I think just maybe having lower scores, or maybe having a few, you know, skill errors here and there, I think that's a small price to pay.
Mm. So that you like the idea of the prospect of outrageous tactics changing the game.
Because that's what happens organically. When you don't give restrictions to people, and this is the same with teaching, when you don't give restrictions, things can come. Things can happen that you haven't planned for, which, you know, some's great, some are bad, but that's the price. That's a small price to pay, I think.
One final one to look at is the amount of games we play in a season. Mm. One of the great criticisms of American sport is they seem to play hundreds of games. At least in our competition, we've got it down to, what, 22 rounds? Two suggestions that I've heard put forward, I'll ask both of them to you. 17 games, so you play everyone, you play 1 year home, 1 year away. Thoughts?
Don't mind it. Don't mind that one.
Finn?
It makes sense, but difficult sell for Gillon McLachlan to convince all stakeholders that less money in the game is going to be better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. And I heard Jared Whateley say he would support 18 games where you have a guaranteed play everyone, and then you have a match-up round so that you get your derby and you get your Anzac Day game and you get your Q clash and whatever. So you get a guaranteed extra one that is a big money maker, is important to people, and guarantees that Port get to go and see the showdown, and the Crows get to go and see the showdown each year. So I support that. As is always the case, and the whole sort of premise of our show is the fact that the game is never fixed. There's never one way, and there never will be. Finn speaks the common sense of the men who sat down to write down the 10 laws of our game, which was, it was never just a fixed set of rules. It was ever evolving, is ever evolving, ever will be. It'll change every single year. And let's hope so, because geez, there's been some beautiful, sexy footy that's been played. Big thank you to Finn O'Sullivan.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Ryan Miller.
Thanks, gents.
That's a big thank you from me. Thank you, and don't get ahead of yourself. And take it one game at a time.
We can come back to that at the end.